Hey, Dee.
Hey, Adam.
What did we learn from keynoting a conference together?
I can't wait to find out. We had such a blast at SEDMA, and I'm going to be interviewing you about your keynote to start.
Actually, we need to say this is CX Etera because the music is going to play, where we imagine the future of CX.
And a bit more.
Amazing. Okay, so somehow all the feedback that we're getting about if we sound natural or not, everyone's gonna be like, hey y'all, like when we said that,
yeah, we didn't mean natural. Yeah, like
we take it back.
We just relaxed, right? We prepped for these talks. That was our preparation.
We're gonna be summarizing and reflecting on things that we actually prepared quite a bit for. You mentioned that we keynoted the SEDMA conference, and SEDMA stands for the Customer Education Management Association. So maybe before we jump into the presentations, let's talk a little bit about what that was.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain that to our audience who might not have been at the conference?
I mean, and I will probably have you explain it, but this was my first time, so it's like a total noob's experience. I actually hadn't been to SEDMA before. Obviously, I've heard of it. It's very famous, very well known. But I just hadn't had the chance in my career to kind of like attend the conference. And so this time I got to go, and it was a 2-day event. And it was essentially customer education leaders from across the globe, you know, coming together and spending time
in Austin,
right, correct, in my backyard, coming together to talk about the topics that are near and dear to our hearts and our careers, right? So everything from customer education to kind of how it's evolving. And that's really where you and I were invited to speak, was to kind of talk about the journey. I think the theme was journey.
Journey to success.
Journey to success, yeah. And so we kind of talked about our careers, but we also talked about the journey of developing our programs. And so would you add anything else to the SEDMA kind of setup?
No, I mean, we're challenging ourselves to be concise. So I think the only thing I would add, I mean, we have different relationships to this conference and even this world, right? Because I think like SEDMA, when I started going, I think the first SEDMA conference I ever went to was like 10 years ago. And they were doing two conferences a year. One was on the West Coast, and usually it was somewhere in Silicon Valley, San Jose, something like that. And they would do an East Coast, usually in Boston or thereabouts. And I've gone to both of them. I think I've spoken at both of them. But when I first started going, the world of customer education looked different at that point. So it was very focused on education services and building this, you know, profitable education P&L, and very focused on live trainings and setting up training centers and training subscriptions and, right, like a lot of focus on monetization and the business of customer education. And they've shifted over the years. And what we're seeing now, I think, is SEDMA is starting to focus on topics that are more related to, I think, the types of programs that you and I run and are part of, which is like, number one, not necessarily focused on cost recovery or becoming a profit center, but rather supporting our businesses in other ways. And I think both of us will talk about that a bit, but also thinking a little bit beyond training services as the like epicenter of what customer education is and starting to think more broadly. And there was kind of like this like awkward middle ground where sometimes, you know, you'd go to the conference in those middle years between there, and they kind of have their focus on, well, what can customer education do to be more like customer success? Or what can customer education do to react to, I don't remember, like this or that trend? And I think like this year, I felt like SEDMA and the conference topics were coming more into their own to say, hey, you know what? This is what customer education looks like in 2025. These are the types of topics that we focus on. This is how we make an impact to the business. Let's not act like we need to make a profit ourselves or die, but let's also not act like we're like the neglected underdogs of the SaaS world. Like let's focus on where we can have impact. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And I love that you added that additional context. I didn't know some of that about Sedba's own journey to success.
Well, and like, because you are also not exactly in the customer education world during some of those years either, right? Like, you've been in product and you've been in other CX areas.
Yeah. And 10 years ago, so like, when you probably went to your first one, I was in ProServe at Box, right? So that's...
Yeah, that's right. You were in ProServe as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think like, in a way, it's also like the like both where we've been in our careers has changed a little bit, and we're coming to Sedma and to customer education from different backgrounds, but even like the conference itself has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, that's really cool. Well, let's jump in. So I'm going to start. Let's talk about your keynote, which I freaking loved, by the way. And even though I've known you for many years now, I just like learned so much. So before I dive into kind of asking you specific questions, just give us like a quick elevator summary of like what your keynote was about and what you were hoping to sort of deliver to the audience.
Yeah, of course. I mean, hope was the word there. I was giving a very jet-lagged keynote.
It's like more hoping you would deliver.
I'm glad you did, because actually, like, you and I brainstormed a little bit, like, what would be relevant to this audience and how to approach it, because, you know, you get asked to do a keynote, and it was like the day one keynote, and it was opening up the session, and, you know, usually if I'm giving a regular conference talk, it's like, okay, I kind of know what I'm going to talk about, I kind of know who I'm talking to, but here I think the combination of it being the day one keynote, like, that added some pressure, as well as the fact that this is a group of people that, you know, a lot of that room I already knew either pretty well, or at least, you know, like, they're people that are in this world. And I was kind of thinking, like, what could I say that would actually be relevant, but also, you know, inspiring and interesting? And, you know, one of my pet peeves at a conference is when people feel like they need to kind of like wrap what they're saying in these huge abstract frameworks that don't, like, that don't necessarily elucidate anything. Like, maybe if you're like very new to an industry, like, a framework helps you orient. But I think here we're talking about like fairly experienced professionals who are not necessarily looking for frameworks to attach their work to. They're looking for practical takeaways. So I was challenging myself. Like, that was the hope. So what I decided to do, by actually like brainstorming some of this with you, so thank you for that, is going through my own journey to success, quote unquote, and thinking about how over the past several companies that I've worked at, how I've been trying to build something bigger than just a training program or just traditional customer education, but rather education ecosystems. So we walk through what each of the ecosystems look like, from Optimizely to Checker to Slack and now at Personio. But the, you know, like, I didn't want to put an abstract framework in there, but I wanted it to feel narratively satisfying. So ecosystem was the theme, but I ended with the idea that, you know, if you take one thing away from this, it's not actually the ecosystem idea that matters. Like, you can create an ecosystem that has these characteristics and operates like this, but what I think made any of the programs that I led successful is not that they were ecosystems, it's that they responded, and the way they were built responded to the needs of the business at that given time. And when they were less successful, they weren't responding as well to the needs of the business. So the takeaway shouldn't be, hey, go build an ecosystem just like any of the ones that I built. It's listen to your business.
So I love that. That's
about what happened.
Yeah. 100%. And so I'll just dive in. You know, there's a couple things that I found so awesome about your talk. I mean, there's many, but these are the salient ones. The first thing that I really enjoyed, and we'll kind of get into this now, but it's like, you went through and you talked about all of your learning. So you would say, okay, here is the organization that I joined, here's what the context was, and here's the program that I built, and then here's what I learned. And then you would like go to the next place, right? And you'd bring the learnings, obviously, from your previous place, but you'd have to design it differently because the context was different, the business needs were different. And so you couldn't copy paste your own stuff. You couldn't copy paste other people's, like, you just sort of had to, you know, do a little bit of a collage and then create new things. And that was really evident in your talk as you went on and you built this story of like your journey as a leader in the space. So I loved that. And that's kind of what I'm going to focus on you with you right now is like kind of diving into each of those things. But before we do that, the other thing I really, really loved was that you had a couple of, you know, you're a great storyteller. So it just sort of felt like it was linear, but you actually like stopped in the middle of the presentation. You had a slide that talked about, look, it looks linear, but it's actually not. And I thought that was really cool. And so then I started to think about the things that you were saying in that way. I don't know. It was cool. The way that you told the story to me sort of not only gave me an easy to follow, so quote unquote linear journey to success that I could look at and learn from, but then you also made it like you were so transparent and open with your learnings that it made us realize, I think, as an audience, that like, look, these things make sense backwards, right? That's what they say. But in the moment, they're a little bit messier. And you have to kind of build, assess, tweak, iterate. And I think that came across beautifully in your presentation.
Well, thank you for saying all of that. I mean, like, especially since you and I brainstormed this in advance, I was really I had a few people in my head where I'm like, you know, if this hits the mark for these specific people, then I feel like I will walk off like having felt like this went well. You were chief among them. Aww. But like, I would be curious to hear your reflections too on especially that kind of like non-linear aspect, how that struck you, because I can't actually remember exactly what slide you're talking about. So let's get into it, and we'll plumb the depths.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. Let's start. So, I'm actually just go through your, so you have a couple slides up here in your presentation. Actually, the linear slide thing is early. I don't know why I experienced, like just talked about it, like it was in the middle, but you'd already at this point taken us through like your career journey and your career path. So then that's probably what I was connecting it with. But you talked about going from, let's see what this is. It's like too teeny. I got to bring it closer to my old eyes. You talked about essentially starting in customer education where you were developing kind of basic curriculum, buying an LMS. And then you kind of at the end of it, you're you know, the step four at this point is you're developing a services program. And you're talking about maturity models. You're talking into like all of this kind of stuff. So there's quite a lot in between, obviously. But let's kind of take it step by step. You defined what an ecosystem is. And then we start talking about how you built out ecosystems at different companies. So let's start with definition of ecosystem in your mind. What is a customer education ecosystem? And then we'll start with optimizing. We'll kind of go through each of your roles.
Yeah, sounds good. And I think like even saying like customer education ecosystem is probably a bit of a misnomer, because what I was
true.
I used to have this thing, and by used to I mean fairly recently. I was trying out this concept where there was skinny customer education, which is like creating an academy and e-learning and training services, right? The things we traditionally thought of as customer education. And then there was broad customer education, which was that plus docs, guides, chatbots, customer events, communities, all of those types of things. And I think the skinny versus broad concept, like people just kind of looked at me with their eyes glazed over. So it clearly wasn't resonating. But I think the more you and I have gotten into this world, I think we can say that actually is, it's not even customer education anymore. It's a scaled CX ecosystem. So that's number one, is that a scaled CX ecosystem is a combination of several programs that operate at scale serving customer outcomes. But specifically, there were three characteristics of an ecosystem that I defined. One is that it should be branded in some way, whether that's the company brand itself or whether it has a specific sub-brand. So think Salesforce Trailhead, HubSpot Academy, Gong Visioneers, something like that. The Miroverse. There should be a connected UI. These things should all feel like they're part of the same program. They don't always, but they should. And then finally, unified goals and operations. So they should be connected on the back end, and they should be serving a consistent set of goals so that we're not all just doing different things and calling it customer education.
That's awesome. And I think such a good distinction, right? Because more and more, all of the things that you just talked about, even something as simple as docs, is powering the work that's happening across the entire customer journey in organizations, across plans, across, I mean, it's being leveraged in product, right? I don't know about many folks, but like the help center, which people used to really snooze on, has become everyone's favorite thing now because it powers.
Oh, totally.
Right.
Well, and now it powers the relevance of AI chatbots and well, actually any like AI knowledge graph that people choose to implement. Otherwise, it's garbage in, garbage out.
Right. Right. Exactly. So it's kind of, So I love that. So you talked about it as a building blocks of ecosystems. It powers the overall customer experience, not even necessarily like what you and I work in, right? It's like beyond us now. It's beyond our function, beyond our teams. It's powering things inside of an organization that are run by product, that are run by growth and acquisition teams, right? That are that are building kind of these monetization, scalable monetization engines, PLG or not.
You're right. People slept on them. Like people would have thought of them in the past, like, oh, like, why are we talking about this in customer education? Or why are we talking about this in customer success? That's like a tech pubs thing. It's like, well, no, it's not a tech pubs thing. It's actually like the core of your customer facing knowledge. So
let's focus on that. Do the obvious things really well, and that's how you're going to scale. I think that's like the unsexy thing about what we work in. It's like, these are bare bones, must have, like not a question. You have to have a help center. You have to document your product, your releases. If you do that well, you're going to set yourself up to scale, right? Don't sleep on that.
Well, and like, yeah, every journey I think that I highlighted, every company that I worked at, we either started with a help center before we even had an academy or e-learning or something fancy like that, or it was something that already existed and I didn't, you know, I had to partner with that team. And I think, again, that would have struck people a little strangely a few years ago, because they just wouldn't have thought of a help center as part of that world.
My, how times change. Everything old is new again. Right.
All of this has
happened before. All of this will happen again. Battlestar Galactica. Okay, so let's jump. Let's jump into. So that was essentially what you talked about. You talked about kind of these branded, connected, unified systems, goals, operations to get to those outcomes. And then you kind of you told us what your main thesis was, which is that it isn't rinse and repeat. Every ecosystem is different. It's based on that customer profile, business goals, skills needed to achieve them, et cetera, et cetera. And then you talked about how you built these out at your various workplaces. So let's start with Optimizely, because I think that's where you went first. Tell us about what you did
there. The first one I chose to talk about anyway. And I want to keep this relatively brief because I think like we can post the decks and, you know, don't want to turn this into like a super long-winded thing about my entire career, but essentially at Optimizely, this was, you know, Optimizely, for those of you who don't know, it's A/B testing and web and now product experimentation, and started there when it was Series A, about 100 employees. And we started with a help center. We didn't really have anything else. And we started experimenting with other things. We built a fake academy to host some written and video content. We eventually turned that into a real academy. But really the highlight was taking Help Center, Academy, and Community and plugging them together in something that we called the Optiverse, which was one of those branded ecosystems. And eventually then adding more programs into that. We added live training. We added low-stakes certs. We eventually added services. And we powered in-app guides to help engage customers and meet them where they are. But I think that was one of the first real ecosystems that I could say I had to my name.
I love that. And again, like, you'll post the slides for folks so that they can see what this all looked like and kind of, you know, what lived in your world, what you launched, what you got from other places, yada, yada, yada. But that's kind of what I want to focus on for like the next one too. So you talked about that ecosystem for Optiverse being the docs, academy, community, in-app, and then eventually services. Let's move into Checker. What was that ecosystem?
Yeah. So you talked about this a moment ago, like the idea that it's not rinse and repeat. And when you don't want to be that person who had some level of success in your previous job, but you don't really know how much of that was you versus how much of that was working at a successful high growth company. So nobody wants to be, or nobody wants to work with the person who just comes in and says, well, at company X, we did it this way. Well, okay, cool. I'm glad you did it that way. Company X, does it actually meet the needs of the company you're working at now? So that's what Checker was all about. And Checker, it's a background check as a service company. So it's basically an API that is running background checks across, I can't remember how many counties there are now in the US, like 3,200 that all have different systems. So if you are driving for a rideshare company and you need your motor vehicle record checked, or if you need your criminal or education history checked, like this is the company that is powering that. And here, I actually, again, it was a good chance to challenge my skills because I started on the legal team. So it was about as far from being in customer success where I was at Optimizely as I could have been. And here it was basically a matter of, all I started with was the only thing I was told to work on was a compliance blog, which is about as far from my world as possible. And from there, I started figuring out, okay, well, where can I kind of consult around the business and build some different things? So I started producing videos that were at first based on legal and compliance, but then turned into a product video series. And then I started going around and looking at, okay, who's the team that works on DevDocs? Who's the team that works on the client help center? Checker's a two-sided marketplace. So you've also got the applicants who are applying for jobs. Let's look at the applicant help center. And similar to what we did at Optimizely, where we didn't just focus on the product, we also focused on how do we help people learn what experimentation is. We did something similar at Checker where we were helping our clients learn what fair chance hiring was and how they could actually change their processes and create fairer hiring opportunities for people who are applying at their companies.
That's so cool.
So, kind of piece by piece, this one was really sort of about consulting my way into, okay, how can I use what I've learned to help these other departments? And sort of took that on piece by piece. And that's how we ended up growing the team and the scope.
That's really cool. And so tell me a bit about the anatomy of the ecosystem you built out there. And I'm going to ask you if some things I think are missing from your first one that we can get into too.
Yeah, sure. We can zoom back and forth in time. So here, we did have that compliance blog, but I stopped working on that after a while because it wasn't really wasn't a big deal. What we ended up building was a learning center for our clients, and that was role-based, a help center, which, nothing too different from a normal help center, and the dev docs, because again, we're talking about an API-first company where it's really important that people can actually build on top of our APIs. And eventually, towards the end, ended up building that fair chance hiring certification.
So no community and no live
offering community
in this case.
No live offerings. Nope.
Makes sense. Why would your customers want those things?
Well, some of them might have, but we just weren't at the point where building those to scale made sense. Again, this was we were fairly early in the company journey. Company was about 150 people when I joined. So again, joining from a very early stage, and there were just so many basic things that we needed to build for scale to begin with. We had a huge, essentially self-service customer base who were using our UI. And then we had these gigantic whale clients who were building, essentially white labeling on top of our API. And there, we had our Should CSMs Do Training episode. Like the CSMs were handling those customers essentially top to tail. So we didn't need to build a scalable program for that.
Wow. Super fascinating. Okay. Let's move into the next one. Which, if this would load,
it's a little known collaboration.
Yes, not known software. Well. You may have heard of it. You may not. Slack.
Yeah. So Slack was an interesting one because here I don't think we built a true ecosystem. And that was one of my big learnings and reflections here. In each of the sessions, I talked about some of the things I didn't think that we did well or that I did well. And here, I think it was kind of failing to turn this into a true ecosystem because Slack just had a lot of different things serving a lot of different purposes. And for those of you who don't know about Slack's business model, Slack was a product-led company, similar actually to how Optimizely was at first. And we were building an enterprise company from within a product-led company. Optimizely was able to achieve that by pivoting the business model and basically at some point abandoning a lot of self-service customers. Slack never did that. Slack always continue serving even the smallest of teams on a free plan. Whereas we then had huge businesses, some of the world's largest, most iconic businesses, trying to set up Slack for their teams of thousands of employees. So we had a bunch of end user resources already available. They weren't on my team. We were collaborating with our help center, our user education team, who had like a learning app in Slackbot, the developer relations team, who was doing our API and a lot of technical trainings and communities, the scaled CS team, the champions program, the community, all of that. Like, those are all collaborations. None of those were in my world. But what I was building was learning services. So we were helping some of those large companies actually figure out how they could enable their users to use Slack and use it in very certain ways that were specific to that company culture. But the main thing as well that, you know, I was asked to build net new from day one was our Slack certified program. And within that, we had both high stakes certifications. We had low stakes skill badges to help enable more people who weren't necessarily ready to be a Slack certified admin or developer or consultant. But because we were building those, then that also gave us an in to work on the partner academy and partner enablement.
So cool. Really, really cool. And then, not finally, but brings us to the present. Yeah. Talk about your ecosystem at Personio. And then we're going to do a little more compare contrasting.
Yeah, of course. So Personio, that ecosystem evolved a lot, but it's kind of back to almost what I had pitched and was trying to build at several other companies. So this is, I think, closest to what we were originally trying at Optimizely, but modernized for, you know, 2025 instead of, it was like 2013 that we were building this Optimizely in the first place. So again, we have a branded program and it is called Personio Voyager. It is based around a help center, a community, and an academy. The help center and community already existed, but we revamped them and pulled them together. They were previously separate programs, and then added the academy as net new. We also pulled in customer events, which we've shifted over time from being these fairly formal us-led events, let's say, to being more user-led, which we call our And Connect series. We also had the customer advisory board as part of customer events. Recently, we have transferred that to our customer marketing team, because that's a great place for also for a customer advisory board to live. And we had what was called a channels team that was operating a lot of our in-app, our mass communications, trying to do a lot of our customer communications triage. And over time, we shifted that into a digital CX program. And then most recently, I would say the new part of our ecosystem is the AI chat support interface, because like we talked about earlier in this episode already, that is quickly becoming the front door for a lot of customers into educational experiences. So we are working not just with like in-apps, guides, and tours, but we're thinking a lot about the in-app support experience and how you get that through chat, how you get that through hopefully in the future, some sort of Miro Learning Center style modal in the app. And those are all things that we're working on with our product team.
That is so cool. So, I mean, you've kind of got pretty much everything right now, right? Like in the Personio level, maybe not services or yes services or...
No services. We do have a services team that we collaborate with, and that will be an ongoing conversation where, you know, right now they handle learning services, but we don't really have, let's say, we don't have a mature training offering. Our services right now are very focused on implementation, which is both technical and because this is, Personio is an HR platform. So there's a lot of configuration of settings. There's a lot of adapting your policies to make sure that they match how your company does business. There's a lot of making sure your roles and access rights are set correctly. So pure training and pure learning services isn't necessarily the main thing that our professional services team needs to focus on. It's making sure the Personio is set up correctly for your specific needs. So it's a lot of configuration and less education. But yeah. I can imagine that in the future, those offerings will come. And I don't have a big ego about this. Like we might lead it. Professional services might lead it. We'll collaborate either way.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. So That's awesome. Is there anything that you feel like in either of those that you would have done that you didn't do in terms of like program or part of the ecosystem? Like, what was the biggest one that you're like, God, why didn't I do this piece of the ecosystem in this context? What was I thinking? Do you have anything like that?
You mean in the previous roles?
Yeah.
Like the biggest one that I can think of is, I mean, it's sort of what I alluded to a moment ago, which was at Slack. I think just the fact that we didn't put more effort on bringing these programs together and really connecting them more deliberately, I think caused pain for our customers.
Yeah.
In fact, we were asked at one point to come in front of our exec team and lay out the entire landscape of different educational programs, whether it was user education, enterprise education, and show how disconnected this was for the customer.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I wish I had put more pressure on like folding those together more deliberately so they really connected and felt like they were part of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that too. Awesome. Anything else you want to say about your talk? I know we need to switch gears here in a minute, but there's a lot of good.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. I don't want to drain it too much. The one other moment that I think people gave me feedback about was, you know, maybe two. Like one was that I was describing headcount growth through these journeys and talking about, you know, in some cases these were modest teams, but even the smallest one, a checker, within a little bit over a year, it went from a team of one to a team of five. And so I think, you know, you and I talked about this even in the run-up to the presentation, that we can right size our teams. We often in customer education, we're very used to operating in a way that we think is too lean or where we can't figure out how to grow our teams. And there's something to be said about building programs in a way where you're demonstrating the impact that you have on business priorities, and that's earning you the right to grow the team, but not taking advantage of that or, you know, growing to the point where you're operating, you know, so heavily that you become a burden to your business, right? I think a lot of people would say like, oh yeah, well, if I could have a team of 60 people, then, you know, I'd be great. Well, no, the reality is if you have a team of 60 people, then you're still going to be asked to do like more than those 60 people can do. So accept at some point that your team needs to be right-sized based on the work that you're doing, and things like, you will always have to make strategic trade-offs. Nothing is purely a matter of capacity. And the only other thing that I would call out, because people gave me feedback about this afterwards, was, you know, in each of the situations, I was trying to show that, you know, I'm not just this like person who wrote a customer education book and therefore did everything perfectly. Like, I think a lot of people at the conference know me personally, but a lot who don't, like, they know me from podcasts and the book and things like that. So I was really trying to like show as well, there were a lot of things that didn't work. And for Slack, when I was talking about that, I was telling a story about how, at that point, I think I was at the, you know, what I felt at that time was the peak of my career. Obviously, like in terms of career growth, I've still had quite a bit, but I had just written the book. I had just launched the podcast. I was working for what at the time I would have said was maybe my dream company. And all of that's true, but it was still emotionally exhausting. And I still felt imposter syndrome. And I still felt like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And there were moments where I was literally hyperventilating in the bathroom, trying to pull all of this off. And so I wanted to share that vulnerability as well. Be like, yeah, you can build all these things, but it's not like it's going to be perfect or easy. Even if you kind of know what you're doing.
I know. I love that you did that. And I think that, yeah, that's such an important thing to underscore, right? It's like everyone feels that moment of hyperventilation, but also what you just said about even if you know what you're doing, right? There's so much nuance in these environments, and the ecosystem is it's like a living, breathing organism, right? So things work, they don't work, and then you try them again later, and what worked once doesn't work anymore, and vice versa. And it's just, you really got to stay on top of, you know, figuring out what you're going to start, stop, and continue, right? Invest, yeah. Divest, like, well, what are we doing with these programs? And I think that's like an interesting exercise. So that was really, that was awesome of you to share that. The realness of it, you know?
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, got to keep it real.
Okay, so there's a slide that you had where you talk about the strategy is consistent, right? And so this is at Personio. This is like recently.
Yeah.
And you're saying you started with a focus on operational efficiency and contact rate. And that's become even more important. So it's like kind of the stuff that we were alluding to earlier, right? Like these things are becoming really important today. And then you said something around build, like this is kind of how you've done it. You had a little image there. It's like building the base, growing the brand,
mm-hmm.
and then powering the economy, right? So driving career success. For the pros, for your audience. I love that you actually start with the base, operational efficiency. Tell me a little bit about that, because actually a lot of the pressure that I'm hearing from some of our colleagues in the space right now is to do whiz, bang, boom at the, like, even though we're supposed to be more of an efficient business, at the expense of true scalability. How did you sort of insist on building the base in this way so you could truly scale?
A lot of this comes down to, and I think I talked about this at some point in the talk, having the right sponsors in place. And if you don't have the right sponsors who, like, if the strategy that you're trying to drive is at complete odds with what you're being asked to do every day by your direct leader or your executives, then this is all going to be way harder. So, like, I want to start by clarifying that some of this is me and some of this is the fact that I report to our COO, who is very interested in operational efficiency and has been since the beginning. But what this slide is like a three horizon model. And it's something that I pitched during my my interview, where you do, you know, a case presentation. It's something that I pitched to the team, and the what's exactly in each of those three horizons has changed a little bit over time. But in general, it's always started, and for 3 years has always been, the base is about starting with operational efficiency, not just like operating for ourselves, but how the business operates at scale. And that if we continue doing this work well, it earns us the right to grow our brand. And if we do that right, it earns us the right to drive career success for our customers. But I was doing this in part because I was trying to learn from Slack, where I think in a lot of cases, it was what you just described, where often it's like, oh, we were trying to do some of the flashy things before we really built the base for scale. And so we ended up putting a lot of work into programs that were slower to start up or slower to scale than I would have liked. And a lot of the time, the challenge was, okay, we're trying to build on one hand, a legally defensible certification program, which question mark if we actually should have been doing that to start with to begin with, but the number of resources that takes. And at the same time, you've got folks from the services team saying, hey, well, why don't you go do a full on-site certification program for this specific customer? And I'm going, well, with which of my, you know, 1.5 team members dedicated to this that are also full-time developing content? Am I supposed to do that? So I was trying to learn from that and basically not skip steps and not try to go do the flashy things before we did the things that would truly earn us the right to do the flashy things. And so on one hand, like, I think this three horizon model works well for showing that it's not that we don't have the vision. We do have the vision, but in what order should we take things, and what do we do now versus what are the somewhat aspirational things that we do next, and what are the super aspirational things that we do in the future? But let's not just start doing the super aspirational things because someone thinks we haven't had the idea, you know?
I love that. I had a conversation with somebody, you know, after this, about this topic, after your talk, and we were talking about how counterintuitive that is for a lot of people who are maybe just starting on their journey leading in this space, right? Leading in CS, in CX, in
education. Why counterintuitive?
Because the like first 90 days situation, it's like, get in there, whiz, bang, boom, low-hanging fruit, it's like, show value in like these very visible kind of optics focused ways that sometimes I think people get lost and they don't build the foundation. And I think you can kind of do both, right? Like it's not,
but that's not wrong, right?
It's not necessarily
wrong.
No, I don't
wrong. think
Yeah. It's not necessarily
wrong. I don't think it's like that's that to me, that's the value for one example in branding the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because having a branded ecosystem and launching it and having it all look the same is both, it does drive operational efficiency, but it is also something flashy and big and aspirational. Gorgeous. But that's different from saying like, oh, we're going to go launch a university program for no reason, just because that's like something we can announce.
Oh, I've been there. I have been there. Yeah. So yeah, it was, and so is the person I was talking to. So I think that this is like a really great message to get out there, right? Like this piece about have a solid base, have a strong base. Again, given where we're going with AI and everything now, garbage in, garbage out, like caring about your data, caring about your tech mm-hmm. foundations, like all that stuff is extremely important. Don't skip steps there.
Yeah, but you're right that like we can't just do that, nor can we get all of that baseline stuff perfect before we go and do anything else. Like,
yeah.
I think you have to have some, it's like product sense. You have to have some sense of which problems need to be solved now. Otherwise, you are really building your entire program on a house of cards, and those are the ones to insist on versus... Yeah. When do you want to make architectural decisions after you've proved out enough about the program that you actually can make mm-hmm. intelligent architectural decisions? So actually, I very much agree with the whole like get low hanging fruit, get some visible points on the board, solve some real problems before you start building the architecture for all of that. And I wouldn't actually want this whole like build the base operational efficiency thing to be misinterpreted as
got it.
Don't do any of that because I do that.
Glad we talked about that. Yeah. I'm glad we talked about that then. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll ask one more question. So you sort of closed out your presentation by talking about the future, right? That was kind of the third part of your presentation as you went through the journey and all of that. And I love that
you feel like you have to say like something big, right?
You know, just something super deep, right? That people are going to be mulling over for the next 2 weeks and pinging you about. And so talk a little bit about that. I'll just call out that you had a slide that said this could all look different. And I loved that.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, my point was, again, like I wouldn't want anyone copying and pasting any of the exact tactics that I used. I mean, maybe like if someone saw something that resonated with their program and said, hey, this would actually solve this exact problem that I'm having, or this actually seems like something we should explore because our customer base has these needs or our business is trying to do this thing. Like, awesome. Yes, go do that. But if someone walked away from the talk, and I tried to be clear about this during the session too, and just took that, then I would be concerned. So this is where I was trying to like put a little twist on things. Because the point is, even if you copy every single thing that I did in 2013, you're probably operating on the wrong playbook because this is in 2013.
Mm.
And I was trying to draw a parallel between, you know, me coming to SEDMA for the first time and talking to all these people who were in education services and looking at me like I had just grown a second head when I was like, yeah, I run our documentation and we don't charge for training and serving customer success and all of that. AI is going to make all of this look different. Not just AI, but, you know, operating in our current economic environment, et cetera, et cetera. So I was trying to call out some examples here of, you know, docs, for instance. Docs will continue to be part of these ecosystems. I don't see docs going away. They're still going to be a source of truth. There's still that garbage in, garbage out problem. But the way that we create them and distribute them is going to look different. Like we are going to have to start writing docs for AI, not for, or less for like browsing or searching.
Yeah.
With training, I think we're going to start to see even more blurring between formal and informal. What we used to call, you know, like micro learning and what we used to call training services. Like I think these are all going to start blurring a little bit more, regardless of the, you know, the monetary vehicle we put in front of them. With community, I was saying, you know, I think people and connections will actually become competitive differentiators for people, for companies, because that's something that isn't easily replicated by AI. But will online forums be the way that people do it? No, I think community teams are actually probably going to have to focus even more on building authentic human-led, sometimes even in-person connections. And digital CX or digital CS, again, it's here to stay. It's going to be connected to customer education programs. It's going to be part of these ecosystems. We need ways to meet customers where they are in the moment to drive specific outcomes based on specific parameters. But will it always be digital CX? I think in some not too long period of time, we're not going to be calling it digital anymore. It's just going to be CX.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's look at all those trends. Let's take a peek into the future. I feel like these are the things you could, like, should say in a keynote, right? Because they sound like inspirational and vaguely threatening. Yeah. But like let's look at those and then let's acknowledge that running any of the playbooks that we just talked about is not necessarily going to work for any of our businesses in the future. So what's actually important is not any component of the ecosystem we talked about. It's paying attention to your business.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem and what's working to solve it. And continue. Exactly. Evaluation of that. Love it. Thank you so much. I feel like I learned even more that we got to dig into pieces of it again. There's just much there. There's just a lot there.
And I felt like I was rushing towards the end of it, even in the live session, because, you know, there was a lot to encapsulate. But hopefully this is also a good artifact for anyone who didn't go to the talk, so you can know what it was about. We'll post the slides, but also even if you did and you wanted like a little bit more of an inside look into why I was talking about some of those things, then hopefully this was helpful too.
I think it really is. I think it was awesome. I can't wait to get this posted. I know there's some folks, and we didn't record any of our chats, so I think it'll be good to have these available, the slides especially, right? So folks can dig into it.
Yeah. Your slides are good. For sure, for sure. Okay, we will post them. And now is when we say the things that wrap up the podcast.
Right,
I don't have
right.
them what in front of me. What do we usually ask people to do?
Yeah, we tell them to go to our LinkedIn. We say, join us on the CXetera LinkedIn page. And we usually post a prompt. What we'd love to hear from you is questions for Adam. I think he will answer them on LinkedIn. So check this episode out on our LinkedIn page. If you've got questions similar to ones that I asked him on this episode, post them in there. There's plenty of stuff I missed. Once you take a look at the slides, you're going to have some more. Post them in there, and I'll make sure he gets back to you. What else, Adam? What else do we wrap up?
Well, maybe we can ask the provocative question too, like for folks, how do you think about your ecosystem within scaled CX or within just CX? What's included, what's not, what do you think should be included? You know, some of the questions that Dee asked me, I would want to know from you as well.
Love it.
And so we can do that. We can ask people to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, because we're still a new little podcast and that really helps.
And we're vain. And we need approval from you. Otherwise, we're not inspired to record. Just kidding.
Yeah, basically this is like, these are the little dots that we eat. Like we're like Pac-Man and 5-star reviews are the little dots.
Yep.
Thanks to Alan Coda for the music that is playing right now. You can check him out wherever music is found as a Coda. And what do we say? See you around the way. Is that my catchphrase now?
See you later,
Alan. See you later.
Later. That's original.
See you later, educators. Educators.
Oh, no. That's cheese ball. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Well, and I've been thinking about conferences a lot, obviously, because you and I just keynoted one together. I just happened to open an email from Tableau, which was talking about their upcoming product conference, and they announced their keynote, and I was like, damn, that's a marketing team that is on point. Like, guess who their keynote speaker is?
I don't know. No one's even coming to mind.
Steve Kornacki.
Dee, who is that? I don't know who that
is. Okay, you know that amazing guy in his khakis during elections, doing like whiteboarding and stuff on TV?
Oh, it's that guy?
That guy. Yeah. Well, that's usually the play, right? You just go for someone famous, probably an athlete or like, you know, I used to go to Maisie conferences like back in the day and, you know, like,
yeah,
we had Michelle Obama one year when I went, you know, so it's like, these are amazing.
But this is way more data, like on point data.
It's just so nerdy, like perfect, like fit, you know? And I just thought that was so cool to be like, you're going to a data conference and like, you know, it's not a celebrity that's like not, you know, like not associated with it. It's somebody who's like deeply enthusiastic about the area of expertise that your product is like a product. I don't know. Yeah. I thought it was so adorable.